the assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, congratulations to the Los Angeles Rams. They are the Super Bowl 56 champions, and that was a well-deserved win. I mean, that was a great game, actually a perfect way for the season to end. This was such a fun season to watch. There was so much parity this year. You couldn't have predicted that this is how it was going to end up with the Rams versus the Bengals. Even with the Bengals making the playoffs, I'm sure only the diehard Cincinnati Bengals fans are the only ones who believe that they could even make it this far. And even when they made it this far, I'm sure not a lot of people thought they were going to win. But they put up a good fight till the very end, and that was just a great way to end the season. Going into the playoffs, usually games aren't that close, especially on wild card weekend. Wild card weekends usually got a couple blowouts, which it did this season, but that was the only time that we had some blowouts. And then the divisional round had all those crazy games. The championship games were crazy. And then the Super Bowl, it wasn't as crazy, but it was just a close game. It was a close battle. Both teams showed up. It was just the Cincinnati Bengals just made more mistakes than the Rams did. I mean, the Rams had no ground game at all yesterday. That was one of the most surprising things to see, is that a team like that had absolutely no rushing attack at all, and you knew every time that they were going to run the ball that you could basically get them behind the line. That's very odd for an offense to actually win and a team win without a ground attack. And I mean, every time they went to the running back, it didn't matter who was the running back either. They just had no shot at anything. So that was very interesting to see. But other than that was the only weakness that the Rams had. You know, Matthew Stafford, he had a good game, other than the two interceptions. But those two interceptions, only one really ended up costing them some points. But they still got the win in the end. And he put it together on that last drive for sure. But the Bengals, They held it in there for the first half. It looked like they were going to make it a solid game. The defense really came out and really showed out. And the offense did what they needed to do. But once the second half rolled around, basically the Cincinnati Bengals' weakness, which was their offensive line, is what really cost them this game. I mean, Joe Burrow was sacked 6 times in the second half. And I know he's been able to overcome it every time that's happened this season, but he wasn't able to get it done on this one. And it's not Joe Burrow's fault. I mean, I think he had a good game. It's not his fault either that there were a couple drop passes as well. So, and they were crucial passes that were dropped as well. So, I think he had a good game. I think he played solid. But that offensive line, it was going to let them down at some point, and, they met their match against the Los Angeles Rams defensive line. I mean, that front seven really had Joe Burrow's number, especially in the second half. You know, the first half they weren't doing well, but the second half hit, and the Bengals came right out, got that interception on Stafford, and then they scored the touchdown. And it looked like, oh damn, the Bengals are going to run away with this. The Bengals receiver, he definitely grabbed Jalen Ramsey's face mask and threw him to ground. But I'm sorry, sometimes calls get missed, and we'll be talking about another penalty a little bit here. But it looked like the Bengals were just going to go on a tear. But the Rams just hung in there. Their defense just kept grinding. They just kept playing. They just kept knocking Joe Burrow down. They just kept making sure that the Bengals didn't get any first downs, and they made it really difficult for them. They didn't even let them get into field goal range for the most part. On the second to last drive for the Bengals, I think it was a big deal when it was like 3rd and 8. Joe Burrow drops back to pass. I believe he throws the ball to T. Higgins for a slant right over the middle, and T. Higgins should have easily caught this ball, and he dropped it. And I think that was one of the key plays and key reasons why the Bengals lost, because that could have set them up for a better fourth down, like a fourth and one, fourth and two type situation, or even possibly got the first down. And that might have helped the Bengals get some life and maybe possibly score some more points to go up, or just hold the ball for a little bit longer. But it didn't work out. Rams get the ball back, and they go on a 15-play drive to take it all the way down the field. They get the ball with they take it past a two-minute warning. There's like a minute 15 left. And, I mean, this entire drive, man, Matt Stafford and Cooper Kupp, like I said, this ground game for the Rams could not get going. And you knew every time that they dropped back, it was going to have to be Matthew Stafford's going to drop back to pass. And him and Cooper Kupp just put it together on this last drive. And they just had a spectacular drive there on that last play. Last drive. And then they were able to, there was a penalty. And Cincinnati Bengals fans are pretty upset about it, but it was a penalty. Usually in the playoffs, the refs will let you play, but I'm sorry, it was a hold. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And I know a lot of Cincinnati Bengals fans are upset about it today. And yeah, it is upsetting to an extent, but there were many other plays in the game that the Bengals could have won. And yeah, it was crucial, but it was still a penalty. And then there was no excuse for the two following penalties right after that. And after the penalties, you know, the Rams were able to take advantage of that. Matthew Stafford throws a beautiful pass to Cooper Kupp in the end zone. And there's about a minute 15 left for the Bengals with three timeouts. And, you of course want to see them get a nice drive going, but I didn't really think it was going to happen. And it's just because, especially in that fourth quarter, the Bengals offense just went cold. And you could tell the Rams defense was just on some. You could tell they were ready for this win. You could tell they were itching for this win. And they were going to make the plays that they needed to make. And that's actually what they ended up doing. It looks like at first, oh shit, the Bengals come right out. Joe Burrow drops back to pass, gets Ja'Marr Chase out there on the sideline, and if he misses this tackle or breaks through this tackle, he could potentially go for a touchdown. He didn't. He did end up getting tackled, and that was about the only good play they had on that last drive. And then after that, they just basically crumpled apart. And I think another big mistake for them on this particular drive was on the third and one. They had P. Ryan in as the running back as opposed to Mixon. And Mixon was obviously having a good game. And he was actually getting them yards. And I know that's usually their game plan is to put P. Ryan in that position. But I think they should have gone with Mixon because he was definitely having a better game. And, you know, who knows what would have happened. They still may have not got it. Hell, he could have fumbled for all we know and things could have been different. But regardless, I think that was another mistake they made on that last drive. And then it's fourth and one, and big old Aaron Donald comes through and makes basically the play of the game. And, Rams take over right from there and take the kneel down, and they are now Super Bowl champions. Super Bowl MVP ended up being the wide receiver Cooper Kupp. He had 8 catches for 92 yards and 2 touchdowns. I don't have a problem with that either, because this day and age, the Super Bowl MVP is about the only time the wide receiver gets any respect anymore. I mean, in the Hall of Fame voting, they always slight them. They usually make them wait a couple years. And, they're never in contention for an actual league MVP. So it's always nice to see a receiver, you know, get his due, especially with the type of season that Cooper Kupp had, because he did have one of the greatest seasons a wide receiver could have. So good on him, but, you know, it could have easily also gone to Aaron Donald, who made some big plays in the second half there. And then also I think Matthew Stafford could have been a good choice as well. But I think those two interceptions kind of turned them. But also, like I said, Cooper Kupp's great season. This is a good cherry on top for his season, especially with the Super Bowl. And, that's how it ended. And it was a good game. Like I said, that was a great way for this season to end. And we'll see what happens with these two teams going into next season. Will the Rams be able to repeat? Will the Bengals be able to make the playoffs? Will they be a better team, or will they have a Super Bowl hangover? You don't know. But one thing's for sure, it was nice to see a new Super Bowl. It was nice to see two new teams there. It was nice to see two new quarterbacks, new storylines. So overall, yeah, it was a great game and a great way to end the season. And really, congratulations to Matthew Stafford. You know, it's kind of funny how last year we had Tom Brady, you know, come in, take over at quarterback for the Buccaneers, comes right in, wins them a Super Bowl, and Matthew Stafford basically did the exact same thing here with the Rams. He was in Detroit, and not a lot of people. I mean, it's so funny to hear how surprised people are at how good Matthew Stafford played, especially in these playoffs. And it's just like, nah, man, he's been that good. It's just he was in Detroit, and he couldn't get out of there, and he really showed out. You know, Odell Beckham Jr., it sucked to see him suffer that knee injury in the second quarter because he was also having a great game. I kind of feel like if he didn't get injured, the Rams would have kicked the shit out of the Bengals because he was playing some unstoppable football up until that point. And, you know, he could have lit them up and he looked like he came to play. And it was sad to see him end his season like that, because it did look like it's probably like a torn ACL, because those kind of injuries, when it's non-contact like that, you can just kind of tell that it's probably a torn ACL, which is just sad. I mean, that's not a way you want to go out for the season. And, but hey, he got a Super Bowl ring, so he at least gets that. But now he goes into free agency with the torn ACL. I don't think that it's going to turn people off of signing him, though. I mean, he's still Odell Beckham Jr. He's still a good player. He put out a solid resume when he was playing with the Rams. And hell, who knows? The Rams may want to re-sign him. Who knows how that's going to go? But, you know, he had a good game yesterday. Like I said, Aaron Donald, great second half. Von Miller, oh my God, that dude, he is just such a spectacular linebacker. He was great in college, and that says a lot coming from me because I'm a Texas fan, and that homeboy went to Texas A&M, and we don't usually support those people out there in them parts of Texas, but nah, Von Miller is the truth, and I rooted for him when he was with the Broncos, and hey, man, maybe he's going to want to come play with the Cowboys and maybe give us some of that Super Bowl juju next year. Maybe he's going to want to win the Super Bowl with us, huh? I don't know if that's a position that the Cowboys are really looking at, but I don't think it could hurt. I don't know. Now something about the Super Bowl that has always bothered me. And since I have my own show, I can actually gripe about this. Now, most people don't gripe about this because they don't want to really touch the subject because they think they're going to offend people. Now, I couldn't care less if I offend people. But the reason why I don't like this part of the Super Bowl is because it's unnecessary and the song choices are boring as fuck. And I'm talking about how they have to drag on the beginning of the start of the Super Bowl. We have to have the Black National Anthem. We have to have America the Beautiful, and we have to have the National Anthem. All three of those songs suck. It has nothing to do with the meaning of the songs. I just think that in general, those songs are so boring as fuck. And it's like, why do you have to drone on for like 900 years with these three shitty songs? This is fucking football. Get the hell out of here with your fucking slow ass. Oh my God. And for me, the National Anthem, I've always hated the National Anthem. I've hated it even before that shitty quarterback Colin Kaepernick did his little kneeling thing. I have always hated that song. I'm a drummer, and when I was in high school in the 9th and 10th grade, I did band, and I kid you not, at every game when we had to start with the National Anthem, I would just eye roll so hard, my eyes would fall on the fucking floor. And I would just start the drum roll and be like, oh my God, I hate this boring ass song. Ugh, Jesus. And like I said, that has nothing to do with the meaning behind any of them, the lyrics of them, any political standpoint. Believe me, I couldn't give two shits in a fuck about politics, especially on Super Bowl Sunday. It's just, I hate all three of those songs. They are just boring on face value, and I'd rather be deaf than listen to those fucking songs. But most importantly, they're not necessary at the Super Bowl. I know they like to do the whole pomp and circumstance about in the Super Bowl, and that's one of my least favorite things about it, because I'm here for the game. But, oh, God, when they start out the Super Bowl with that shit, it just, oh, I am so bored, and it's usually the perfect opportunity for me to go to the bathroom, and that is actually what I did during part of it. And so, yeah, but now on to good fucking music. How about that halftime show, y'all? Oh, Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg blew that roof off. I mean, damn, that was such a spectacular performance from all five of all six of the performers, because we even got a surprise. It's such a great set selection. I loved the setup of the stage. They all picked great songs. I was super excited because the two songs I really wanted them to play, they played California Love and Still DRE. Oh my God, it was just such a great experience to watch them. That was like the soundtrack to my high school right there. It was so, so awesome to see all of them on stage. And you know, man, Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg, they still got it, man. They still got it. They put on such a spectacular show. And oh my God, that was such a, it was such a great thing for hip hop too. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you're in hip hop, which I've been in hip hop now since 2009, so I've been in it for a while. I know what it's about. And to see, because there's never been a time where any of us in hip hop ever thought we would see this. And the reason why is because we never thought anybody was going to let the black people in the building. I mean, come on now. That's just what it is with hip hop. It's still a thing to this day. I mean, something that we hear regularly here, even in the almighty liberal Austin, Texas, there are places that will not allow us hip hop rappers to perform at their venues because of the quote crowds we bring in. Now, they don't say because you're bringing black people, and they lie and say that we bring in like gang members and shit, even though there are plenty of rock shows where their crowds get pretty rowdy and, you know, beat people up and do crazy shit and maybe shoot people or kill people. These are things that happen at all shows. It's actually not really it's not the people, it's not what their color of their skin, it's not their age. You know what actually the common denominator in all these fucked up situations that happen if you're at a show? The common denominator usually is drugs and alcohol. That's usually what it is. It doesn't have anything to do with your skin color. But that is the thing about hip-hop, is they don't want to let us in the building. And they don't even want to let the white girl in the building, because if you're hanging with the black people, they don't want you there either. If you rake the coal, pay the toll. That's a real-ass fucking thing right there. And so to see us, and yes, I say us, because I am us in hip-hop. I am hip-hop, trust me. Check my resume. I know I love hip-hop. I am hip-hop. And so to see them just finally get the chance to display to over 100 million people. You know, there's some people who probably haven't heard any of those songs, and maybe they like those songs now. And I know there was a lot of people who didn't like it, but guess what? That's the halftime show. Not everybody likes the halftime show. And I do understand, if you're not a fan of that kind of music, why you wouldn't have enjoyed it. But guess what? Sucks for y'all, because we loved it. And that's a perfect display of what you want to show this is what hip-hop's all about. I mean, you got Dr. Dre, you got Snoop Dogg. Those are two OGs in the game. They started this gangsta shit, and this the motherfucking thanks they get. That is some real-ass shit right there. And so to have them be on stage, who have had 30 years in this game, and then you got Eminem and Kendrick Lamar and Mary J. Blige, and this is hip-hop. And it was just fucking dope to see, and then they brought out 50 Cent, and it was just such a spectacular moment for hip-hop. And it was great to see, hey, they let us in the door. Here we are. fuck you if you don't like us. And they did a great job. That was a great halftime show. And I'm just like even thinking about it right now, I'm just getting the tingles just because they did such a spectacular job on that. And I was just as happy with the halftime show as I was the game. And that's very rare for me because usually it's all about the game. Even if somebody I like's performing, it's usually all about the game. But that halftime show was electric. And hands off to all six of them who performed because they did a great job. It also goes to show, because when you are in the music industry, and especially on the underground independent side like I am, you run into a lot of people who just want shit handed to them. They all think that, like, they're just waiting for the magic label fairy to hand them money and that everything's going to be taken care of for them and they don't have to invest in themselves. And that's the number one thing a lot of people don't realize is you have to invest in yourselves. And last night was the perfect example of that because they paid for that set. They paid for that stage. They paid their own money for that shit. So all you rappers out there who sit around bitching and moaning and complaining and looking for the fucking magic label fairy to save you and give you free money, how about you invest in yourself? That's the best way to do it. And those motherfuckers last night showed you that's how you do it. So great halftime show. And with that being said, now it's officially on to the next season, the 2022 season. It's now on, who's going to go to Super Bowl 57? Now, of course, you know I'm all about Cowboys, man. It's the Cowboys year. Come on. You're going to hear me talking that shit, too, because they are actually a good team. They are known for choking and being losers. And, hey, who knows what can happen with them. But I got high hopes for my Cowboys this year. And so now we're on to Super Bowl 57. All of us. All the rest of the 31 other teams who didn't win, we all now get to sit back and see what happens with free agency because that's all starting. But there's even some headlines that we could talk about that actually happened over the weekend. And by the way, even though football season's over, don't think I'm going to stop talking about football because, you know, football is actually year-round. But I know I'm going to find many things to talk about. And probably starting either this Friday or next Friday, I'm going to start breaking down each team's needs for the next season and anything that happens, any trades, any rumblings, anything that's actually worth talking about, I'm going to talk about, especially when it comes to the NFL, because we all know just because the season ended, the season didn't really end. It's still going. Adrian Peterson was arrested yesterday for domestic violence. Apparently, he and his wife got into it on a plane in L.A. Obviously, he wasn't playing at the Super Bowl. Maybe he was there rooting on Matthew Stafford, which probably would have made sense. They were teammates at one point a couple years ago. This also isn't really, I mean, there really wasn't they didn't really go into detail of what happened. You know, it could have just been one of those things because they did get in a fight on a plane. I don't know if it was physical or just yelling or whatever. If it got to a point on the plane that it was just pissing off the flight attendants, I mean, of course, they're just going to call the cops and get you the fuck off there. So it could be as simple as that. But also, Adrian Peterson, if you don't recall, was arrested a few years ago for abuse on his child, hitting his kid with a switch. So, domestic violence isn't something new to Adrian Peterson, so just going to throw it out there like that. But also at the same time, I don't think he has much of a future in the NFL other than maybe as a backup or a guy who, because what he did this year was basically he just came in if a running back got injured, and he really didn't last on any team. So Adrian Peterson probably doesn't have much of a future in the NFL anyways. The offseason hits and the arrests start. And that's not just me joking. That's actually true. As we've already had two, him and Alvin Kamara, the running backs now are the punching backs, apparently. And so, we got a ton of quarterback news, of course. Things are getting a little weird with Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals. Now, I didn't really, like, care too much when this happened because the original, rumblings were, oh my God,
Kyler Murray removed everything on his social media that has to do with the Cardinals. And honestly, when I hear that kind of shit, I'm like, who the fuck cares? Like, that's such, like, I don't know, such high school bullshit to me. But that's how people operate these days, is through social media. So they started, like, and when I heard that, I'm like, well, what is Kyler Murray's problem? Because, you know, I understand the team fell apart this year, but that doesn't mean they can't be a good team next year. And I kind of think they're actually headed in the right direction to becoming a good team. But Kyler Murray looks like he might end up being the drama queen of the offseason. We always have a drama queen of the offseason. Last year was Aaron Rodgers. Who knows if he'll continue that on into this season, but looks like Kyler Murray's starting us off. You know, it's looking like they're going back and forth, basically kind of saying that the Cardinals look at him as not much of a leader and he might want some more money. And I'm just looking at this like, well, first of all, in my personal opinion, Kyler Murray doesn't have enough clout to be walking around with his chest out acting like he's owed some shit because he hasn't done some shit. And I'm not saying he's a bad quarterback. Actually, I think he's a good quarterback, and I think he's showed potential to, you know, possibly be the next guy who makes a Super Bowl run or could actually win some MVPs. You know, bitching with your team, that doesn't get you anywhere. And so I thought it was kind of weird. We'll see what happens with it. Does it end up in a trade? Either way, that kind of shakes up the league a bit. But I really don't think he has any clout to be bitching and complaining because he was part of the reason why they collapsed, as was the injuries to the entire team, as is the coaching of Cliff Kingsbury. You know, I mean, there's many reasons why their season fell apart towards the second half of the season. But Kyler Murray didn't help, and he definitely doesn't have the clout to be walking around like he's Aaron Rodgers, because you know what? Aaron Rodgers actually does have the clout to be a dick to the Packers. He's won a Super Bowl. He's won 4 MVPs. He's proven his worth to the team, whereas Kyler Murray only has a couple seasons in the league. And you have to be a veteran who's actually won shit, in my opinion, to really be complaining, especially when you have such a setup as Kyler Murray has, because he's got a good team, too. I don't know if he's taking a look at... he's got, you know, the best wide receiver in the league in DeAndre Hopkins. You know, they picked up Connor last year from the Steelers at the running back. And so, I mean, I don't understand what his problem is. The offense is doing, they've got some firepower, and the defense looks pretty solid too. And while I question whether or not Cliff Kingsbury is actually going to be a solid NFL coach, I mean, they made the playoffs this year, so I think they can only go up from here. But when you have drama like this, that usually doesn't bode well for your upcoming season. So we'll see what happens with the drama there. Also, it looks like the Indianapolis Colts are going to be done with Carson Wentz at quarterback. That went just one season with them. I guess they weren't that impressed. You know, I wasn't really either. I don't know what they're going to go after, though, so it should be interesting to see how this pans out, but that also throws another quarterback out there for somebody else to go after. But I don't know where Wentz is going to fit in, but it doesn't sound like he's going to fit in with the Indianapolis Colts, and I don't know what route they are going to go for quarterback, and I don't think there's a lot out there in the draft. So it's looking more like you're going to need to be trading in the trade market for somebody like a Russell Wilson, if that's a real legit thing that's going to happen. Or you're going to have to, I don't know what the Colts are going to do, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that scenario. But it looks like it's going to be happening here within the next couple of weeks, because he's got some type of bonus. And usually when that bonus comes up, they're either going to try and trade you, and or they're going to release you. And they're going to go either way, it sounds like. And so there's the Carson Wentz era in Indianapolis, one whole season. And then another quarterback news, it looks like the Las Vegas Raiders, they're all in on Derek Carr.
which they should be. I don't know why you wouldn't be all in on Derek Carr, but it looks like they're going to keep him and build the team around him. And then the Green Bay Packers reiterated once again that they want Aaron Rodgers to stay, and they are actually willing to pay him a lot of money to stay. So I kind of have a feeling the Aaron Rodgers drama is not going to last that long into the offseason. I think he's actually going to put his big boy pants on this year and hopefully have a good offseason with his team and maybe, get himself another Super Bowl, because you know he wants one. All right, and then since Friday, I spent the entire day talking about Super Bowl because, duh, there ain't nothing more important than the Super Bowl, especially on Super Bowl weekend. But we did have a big trade last week at the NBA trade deadline. Philadelphia 76ers finally traded away Ben Simmons. They ended up trading him to the Brooklyn Nets. They traded him, Seth Curry and Andre Drummond to the Nets. And James Harden has gone to the 76ers. I don't know if either of those trades are really going to work out for either team, because both players are crybabies. And if things don't go their way, then they tend to play some me-ball, and they don't really give a shit about their team. I think with James Harden, it might be a better fit, just because he has signed on for next season. So I don't see him playing half-ass, at least towards the end of this season. So it might work for them at the end of this season. Now, one thing about James Harden is he's known for his disappearing acts during the postseason. So I'm not quite sure how that's going to work, but we'll see. I mean, Joel Embiid is playing at an MVP level this year, and he definitely needed somebody else on the court with him, and I think James Harden's probably going to be a good match for him, at least for the rest of this season. We'll see what happens next season, because, you know, he'll only be on the one-year deal, and he might do the whole threatening of trades shit again, so you don't know with James Harden, but I think this, for the rest of this year, could be a good trade for the 76ers. Now, the Nets, on the other hand, I don't know what they're getting with Ben Simmons, because Ben Simmons has a very odd game. He's not a very good shooter. And in this league, you kind of got to be a good shooter. You got to at least be a halfway decent shooter. And that's the thing on him, is he's not that good of a shooter. He's more of he's good with passing and transition, and he's good in the paint. So he might actually work out well with the Nets. But honestly, I kind of feel like the best part of this trade for the Nets is actually getting Seth Curry. They could actually use him, especially because, you know, with Kyrie Irving not being able to play home games, Curry could actually come in and play basically take over for Kyrie. And Drummond's not a bad player either. He'll actually help them out in the paint as well. So it could be an okay move by the Nets. It doesn't make me think they're a championship caliber team. Whereas the 76ers, I already thought they were a championship caliber team. I think Harden only adds to it. But we'll see what happens with this. And that was really the only noteworthy trade that did happen during the trade deadline. The rest were kind of just little bullshit here and there. The Mavericks did trade away Porzingis to the Washington Wizards, but they didn't really get much in return that I think is going to put them over the edge and really get what I was hoping they would get for Luka. But who knows? I mean, the Mavericks are still playing good basketball right now. And I think getting rid of Porzingis was what they needed to do to at least get something for him. You could tell him and Luka's games did not mesh well together. They just are two guys who didn't work well on the court. And I just kind of felt like the Mavericks needed to get rid of him. And they did. So that's that there. And then also something that happened last week was LeBron James is now the all-time scoring leader when you combine regular season points and postseason points. He passed Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He has 44,150 points, and still counting, because there's still a second half of the season and there's still a postseason, even though those hopes with the Lakers for this year's postseason are pretty slim to none, in my opinion. But that's a pretty big feat, especially when you pass Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, one of the greatest basketball players of all time. And it's not really shocking that LeBron did. I mean, he's got such a huge body of work. He's been to the postseason the majority of his career. And he goes far in the postseason, so it's not shocking that he is now the all-time leading scorer when you combine regular season and postseason. I think he's still got about 6,000 away from just the overall overall all-time leading scorer, which Kareem Abdul-Jabbar still owns. I don't know if he'll pass it. Everybody thinks he will, but I mean, who knows what to expect. But he is playing at a high level. I wouldn't be surprised if he were able to pass Kareem on that. And then with that being said, let's move on to my top 10 NBA power rankings. There actually isn't much change at the top. It's more at the bottom. And there actually is a team who has not been in my top 10 who worked their way up in the bottom of it this week because they are probably the hottest team in the league right now. So number one, we're starting off with, once again, the Phoenix Suns, 46-10, coming in on a five-game winning streak. They're 9-1 in their last 10 games. And honestly, they're just playing great. They have no weakness at this point. And honestly, if they don't win the NBA championship, I don't know what their problem is. They must just be choke artists in the postseason, which actually is a Phoenix Suns thing, if you know. Also a Chris Paul thing, too. So we'll see. Hopefully they don't waste their spectacular regular season they're having. But they're looking solid right now. Number two, I still have the Warriors. I was going back and forth. I almost put the Grizzlies up there. And the only reason why I didn't is because in the last 10 games, they're both 8-2. I've had the Warriors at number two. They're 42-15. They got some good wins this week. You know, Klay really is starting to get hot, too. He torched the Lakers the other night. Lakers actually played a solid game against the Warriors, shockingly, but they lost in the end, of course. That's why the Warriors are number two. They're still playing great. Grizzlies number three, like I said, coming in on a five-game winning streak, 8-2 in their last 10 games. Ja Morant still is playing at such an MVP level. They're just playing great. And then number four still remains Cleveland Cavaliers. They did just lose a game the other night, but they're like 15-17 in their they've won like 15 of their last 17 games. So they're just playing so great, and they made a trade for Caris LeVert at the trade deadline, and he came right in on his first game and just had this explosive game and just put them over the edge there. So, I mean, Cavaliers, I don't know if they're for real, but they're playing great right now, and they're number four on my top 10 NBA power rankings. Number five, I have the Miami Heat, bumped them up a couple spots this week. They're 37-20. They're on a five-game winning streak right now and 7-3 in their last 10 games. And they're just playing some really methodical basketball. I don't think a lot of people are paying attention to them, but they're playing some good basketball right now. So I've got them at number five. Number six on my top 10 NBA power rankings, I have the Philadelphia 76ers, basically at the same spot they've been. They're 34-22. They're on a two-game winning streak right now. They're in 7-3 in their last 10 games. And, you know, Joel Embiid still playing at a high level. So, I mean, unless he gets injured, I think the Eastern Conference is probably going to roll through Philadelphia because he's a matchup that a lot of teams out in the Eastern Conference are going to have a problem with. And then number seven on my top 10 NBA power rankings, I have the Utah Jazz at 35-21. I haven't had the Jazz ranked at all because they actually haven't been playing that well as of late. Now, Donovan Mitchell has been battling injuries as well as Gobert. And the funny thing is the two of them apparently don't like each other, but they're playing well with each other right now. They're on a five-game winning streak. They're only 5-5 in their last 10 games, but they've turned it around from where they were about a month ago. So I bumped them up to seven because they're on a nice tear right now. Then at number eight on my top 10 NBA power rankings, I have the Milwaukee Bucks. I really only dropped them because they dropped like a game, and you know the Jazz are hot right now, so they did drop down a little bit. But I mean, they're 7-3 in their last 10 games, and there really isn't anything bad you could say about the Bucks. They're just playing solid basketball, and I expect to see them there in the end in the East. And then number nine on my top 10 NBA power rankings is the Boston Celtics. Now, they started off the season absolutely atrocious, but out of nowhere, this team, they are on an eight-game winning streak. They've won. They're 9-1 in their last 10 games. They're 33-25 right now, and they're just setting the league on fire. They're playing some spectacular defense. Jason Tatum, he just continues to be a great leader for them. And I had to put them up in my top 10, and I saw what they were doing. I'm like, shit, man, got to put the Celtics in there, even though I hate those motherfuckers. And then rounding out my top 10 NBA power rankings at number 10 is actually the Chicago Bulls. They have they've finally found another winning streak. They're 6-4 in their last 10 games. They're on a 3-game winning streak right now, 36-21. Still second out in the Eastern Conference. And they had a little slump there, especially due to the injuries that they still are going through. But they're playing some solid basketball right now, and I got them at number 10. And I mean, speaking of the Eastern Conference is so close right now, especially spots 1 through 7. They are all within a half game or one game of each other. So it's going to be interesting just to see how this Eastern Conference plays out, because the Western Conference is pretty far apart. A couple of the teams are like 12 games ahead of the other. Even so, I mean, like, it's really top heavy in the West, whereas in the East, you really can make a case for every team to show up in the NBA Finals. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the Eastern Conference this year, because the competition is great out there, and they're all close right now. There's a few games going into Wednesday, Thursday, I believe, this week, and then we have the All-Star break this coming weekend. I never care. I don't care for All-Star games. I actually used to like the NBA All-Star game. I used to like the three-point competition and the slam dunk competition and the All-Star game overall. It actually used to be competitive. But, like, for some reason over the last couple of years, it just hasn't really been interesting, especially the slam dunk competition. I mean, it just gets worse and worse every single year. It's like dudes forget all you have to do is slam dunk the ball. They try to think of too many gimmicks and bullshit to do with it, and it's like, dude, all you need to do is just maybe do a crazy windmill or between the legs, something or other. But, like, we don't need you to jump over Kevin Hart. That's just fucking stupid and gimmicky. And it's one of the reasons why I don't really care to watch the All-Star game anymore. And then the All-Star game itself, the play on the court is gimmicky. I don't like this shit where they now have like team captains who pick players, and I just think it's all dumb. So I won't be watching the NBA All-Star weekend. But there are some games going through Wednesday or Thursday this week. Until the All-Star break. And then in the NCAA basketball top 10 teams, we actually had a shake up at the top. Auburn finally lost again this weekend. So that bumped Gonzaga up to the number one spot. They're 21-2. That bumped Auburn down to number two. They're 23-2. They did bounce back after their loss. So Auburn, I don't think you need to worry about them. Arizona, though, you do need to worry about, because they are on a tear right now, and they're moving up these rankings, and they're up at number three. They're 22-2. Kentucky is at number four. They're 21-4. Purdue took a little bit of a tumble this week at 22-4. They're number five. Kansas is number six. They're 20-4. They bumped up a couple spots this week. Baylor, they got a couple big wins this week, so they are bumped up a couple spots at number seven. They're 21-4. A couple out of nowhere teams bumped up this week. One being Providence up at number eight. They are 21-2. Duke fell a couple spots to number nine. They're 21-4. And then another shocker coming into the top 10 is Villanova. They bumped up five spots to number 10, and they're 19-6 right now. And my Longhorns are staying strong at 20. I thought they were gonna lose both games last week, but they actually ended up beating Kansas in a very good game. But then following it up with a complete ass kicking, getting their asses kicked by Baylor on Saturday. It wasn't even a game, but hey, they split both really good games, or really good teams, and so I was happy to see that. I really did not expect them to beat Kansas, because Kansas is a good team. Like I said, I like what I see from Texas this year, but I don't know. don't know what they're going to do in the tournament. I hope they can shake some shit up, but that was definitely a big win against Kansas. Bad loss against Baylor. And then one final note, since there isn't much baseball updates going on these days due to the lockout, we did find out something that they did agree upon that's going to be for starting next season is there's finally going to be a universal DH in both leagues. The designated hitter is going to be now in the NL. For many years, the National League has held back in having a DH. I'm a San Francisco Giants fan, so when we had Madison Bumgarner as one of our starting pitchers, it actually wasn't that bad having him come up to the pitching spot in the batting order. But other than him, the pitching position in the batting order is a waste of time. And so I'm absolutely happy with this change. And it showed it's totally worth it because in the shortened 2020 season, that was actually something they did where they made both leagues have a DH, and it absolutely was better. The competition was better, and it didn't feel like there was a wasted position in the batting order because, I mean, it really does slow the pace of the game when a pitcher comes up to hit, and, I mean, he strikes out, like, immediately with just three pitches, or I mean, sometimes, yeah, the bunt, it's okay, but it can help get some good field position. But other than that, a pitcher is just a wasted spot in the batting order, and I'm glad to see that we're going to have this change whenever we get some baseball. There still is no movement on this collective bargaining agreement, but I was happy to see that we are going to have a universal DH in both the American League and National League because it's definitely, I think, the best way to go for baseball. So, you know, that's today's episode, and I'll talk to you guys on Friday, and I will leave you with this quote from Dr. Dre's The Next Episode. Hey, smoke weed every day. R.I.P. Nate Dogg.